Talk about the Greens, that bunch of idiots.
Hey there, Climactic Collective listeners.
I'm Emerald Moon.
And I'm Tom Bella.
And together we host Serious Danger,
a podcast about Australia's broken political system and its greatest threat,
the Australian Greens.
It's a show about green politics in Australia.
The kind of politics that puts people and the planet before profit.
We talk to cool and interesting people about fighting for good shit, like taxing billionaires,
housing for all,
workers' rights,
First Nations justice,
and drugs. Sweet, sweet, sweet drugs.
Join us on Serious Danger every Sunday. You can subscribe to us anywhere you get podcasts.
You can find us on Patreon. We're at Serious Danger AU on the socials, or just head to seriousdangerpod.com.
That's Serious Danger with me, Emerald Moon.
And me, Tom Ballard. Do you think we need something at the end there? Go Greens.
Welcome to the Sustainable You podcast with your hosts, Jackie Kidman and Lisa Whiston, self-proclaimed urban hippies, waste warriors, and passionate women. Tune in for practical information and inspiration on how to reduce your impact on the environment and become a more sustainable you.
Before we begin, Lisa and Jackie would like to acknowledge the traditional custodians of country throughout Australia and the places on which we record our podcast. We pay our respects to elders past, present, and emerging.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to this week's episode of Sustainable You Podcast. I'm your host, Lisa.
And I'm your other host, Jackie.
Welcome. And today we have a very special guest. We're kind of fangirling, aren't we?
Totally.
Welcome to Mark Spencer of the Climactic Podcast.
Woo! Thank you so much for having me. And it's one of those awkward things where it's like, oh, when it happens and you're on the other side of that, like, it's awkward as well. It's something you have to get used to. Like, I'm not used to people knowing who I am or caring. I'm fangirling over you two.
Oh, please.
Please.
I probably should start by saying that you have recently released your 100th official episode, mm-hmm. but you've had more than 150 go up on the Climactic Network.
Yeah. So what's that all about? So we're at 100 main numbered episodes, which is a milestone that I've celebrated with other people before by being a fan, by being a listener of their shows. And it was such a cool moment. It's like, oh man, this show I found like 3 years ago is like, it stuck around, and oh, these funny people are still doing comedy from their kitchen tables. And
yeah.
And like to be doing it is just like, oh, well, okay. But that there's still gonna be 101 by next week. It's just a number, but it is cool to pause for a second and be like, wow, triple digits.
Absolutely.
That's really cool.
It's a lot of hours. Like, we were, as you know, podcasters, you know, it's a lot of hours and work that goes into producing and talking about these topics. And it's a huge effort. And
yeah.
But not only that, more than the number of episodes that you've put out, is that you've had over 100,000 downloads.
Yeah. That one, I have to pinch myself over a lot.
That's epic.
And what the weirdest thing about it is that I don't feel like I used to be more nervous about going on a graveyard slot with a friend of mine at college radio in Auckland, New Zealand, between the hours of 3 and 6 a.m., where we knew exactly that no one, except the two people who would text us all the time because they were weirdos, were listening. And yet,
the weirdos.
Like, I felt more nervous about being live on air. And yet, I think of 100,000, and it's not 100,000 people, right? Like, there'll be people who've heard over 100 episodes of Climactic, which, okay, that's crazy to think about that. But there's, you know, there's definitely hundreds.
Mm.
There is probably thousands.
Mm.
So I think of even just hundreds of people in a room listening to me live, and I'm like, yeah, that's scary. But it has been a really cool way of getting to that point. And as someone who wanted to be doing live speaking and doing live shows and stuff, you know, a few years ago, I would have thought about that and thought, yeah, that'd be something I'd like to do, but I don't know how I'm going to get there or what that road to there looks like. And but just by starting a podcast, literally in a bedroom, getting some other people on board, learning how to deal with the sound of my own voice, that's a big hurdle. And it's what you've probably heard so much from other people as well, right? When they come on the show and it's like, oh, I'm scared to listen back because...
Yeah.
Well, that's actually Lisa.
Yeah.
To be honest.
Yeah, I still cringe.
She's like, I mean, not that I think that my voice is angelic or anything, but I don't mind a microphone. Most people who know me personally know that. Lisa and her husband, Lisa's husband and I often fight over a microphone at a party.
Yes.
But, yeah, Lisa was like, oh, God, my voice or, you know, and I just, for me, I'm just like, it doesn't matter. Like, just we want people to realise that we're just two people sharing a story.
Yes.
And to think about it, basically, if you were out having a coffee with someone or a beer or a rosé, that, you know, it's how would you be if you're just sitting around talking to your mates?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's basically how I look at it. When I listen to a podcast, I feel like, you know, I'm listening to someone that is just chatting to me at a cafe or something like that. So
that's what a successful podcast can do, is make you feel like you're the fly on the wall. You're a member, you're a participant of a conversation, but you're just not speaking.
Mm. Yes, absolutely.
But like I found with a good podcast conversation, that's definitely what it feels like. It's just slightly more courteous than when I do it with friends in real life.
Yeah. So maybe first of all, for anyone of our audience that doesn't know who Mark Spencer is from Climactic.
I've heard that's a thing that, like, if you haven't heard of me, that's ridiculous.
What rock are you living under?
Tell us what it is that you do.
Yeah. So what I do is apparently I start podcasts, which if you told me that 2 years ago, I wouldn't have believed you. I'd say, no, I listen to podcasts. That's what I do. You know, what I do for a day job seems to change about every year because I get bored and move on. I've done sales. I've done hospo. I've done English teaching in China for a couple of years. I've done a weird variety of things. But what I do now is work in the podcasting space, world, industry. Yeah. It's a weird space because it feels like for me it's been around a long time, because it has been for me. It's been the majority of my life has been spent listening to podcasts. I started when I was 12, which people get surprised that there were podcasts around in 2002. They were called audio blogs. It was mainly out of San Francisco in the Bay Area, and it was about technology, and it was the early days of, okay, sorry, this is getting nerdy. It's very, very briefly. It was a technology called RSS, which is how Google Reader worked and how you could subscribe to blogs and have their content. Rather than having to go check six different blogs every day to read what you wanted to read, it pushed out to you. So you'd say, hey, Google Reader app, go check these six sites for me and then bring it all back into one place for me. That's exactly how podcasts work now, because it's built off that spec.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So kind of it was like I was a kid in, and I'm going to get the dates wrong, but like say it's the 1600s and I live in like Leipzig and Gutenberg has just invented the printing press. And like I'm his little bratty next door neighbor kid. And I've just seen how this stuff like developed and works. And now it's like, oh, there's now an industry in like printing things. That's crazy. Okay, what do we do with that? And now it's like, oh, and now it's like Hearst and like the New York Times. And now there's like big publishing companies. And we've all kind of seen swells in podcasting, the Serial moment. And then a couple of years ago, Kim Kardashian started listening to podcasts. And that kind of was another big wave, embarrassingly enough, that I was really excited about, because I don't care what You've Kim Kardashian it. Thinks, yeah. but she likes what I like. So that's validating. So yeah, I started Climactic because I wanted to listen to it, and it didn't exist yet. There's shows like it in the States more now than there was even a couple of years ago, but there was nothing kind of relatable about climate in podcasting in Australia for Australians, about Australians. It's very specific, but
but it's also like it opens up Australia to you, like,
yeah, and it really has, because the environmental community is strong and old in Australia. Like we know about Bob Brown and the Franklin River campaigns, and these are all things I've learned about by doing the show, but the history is all there.
Yeah.
But it's siloed, and it's kind of, you know, everyone I've spoken to has a crazy uncle or a cousin who was involved in environmental activism at some point in the 70s, 80s, or 90s. Nuclear free was massive here. But those stories weren't getting told. And there was no mention of it in mainstream news. And there was just like this sense of like, ah, we're the country that exports a lot of coal and everyone seems to be cool with it.
Yeah.
But that's not the case. And there wasn't a lot of, yeah, media being produced about, much less by, the people who were opposing bad things happening. So, yeah, I started Climactic because I knew there were stories to be told. I wanted to hear them. And if no one else was going to go out and ask people for their stories, I would. Had that little streak of like, ah, American, don't mind being on stage, don't mind people looking at me, don't mind being loud.
So just going back a little, why did you choose a topic around the climate and climate change? Was there a pivoting moment, or was there something that triggered you to kind of go, oh, I need to learn more about this?
There was a sequence of small moments. So, you know, as someone who's asked that question of many other people, you know, was there a light switch moment? Was there a pivot? And, you know, sometimes there is, but most of the time it's, there was a gradual curve. And mine was spending 2 years in China teaching English. Whereas before that, I was concerned. I knew that climate change was a long-term threat. I grew up reading a lot of science fiction, and I was a homeschooled only child. So, like, it's kind of weird mental mutation that came about because of that upbringing. That, like, I could imagine living in the 2050s just as well as I could in the 1950s, just as well as now. If you can imagine just the things around you being different, when I got to China, I realized that the future was already here in some places, and that you know, it's the saying in technology that the future is here, it's just not evenly distributed, and that China was already in a post-apocalyptic landscape, that people were already growing up not knowing that the sky was meant to be blue. That was a really striking moment for me. I was teaching English, and you know, you'd ask your 5-year-old students colors, you know, what color's the ocean, green or blue? Okay, what color's a river? You know, dark green. Well, it's not meant to be. Oh, but it is. Like, you can see it out the window there. This river is stagnant and dead and filled with algae, and it's dead green. It's dark dead green. What color's the sky? Gray. Well, no, you're right. You're right. I was there for 2 years. We had 5 days of blue sky in my city. You could stare right at the sun every day. Didn't matter. Multiple days, you just didn't see the sun. It was just like a vague glow.
Gosh.
So, and just to think we've come out of, we're in a month in Australia
where we're seeing that
majority
now.
Of people in Australia haven't seen blue sky. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've got blue sky here today, but, you know, like, and can you imagine that being the, wow. I do know my in-laws traveled to China last year. They said the same thing. They said, they don't recall seeing any animals.
No.
Like they said, they don't recall seeing any birds. Only when they went out to like certain places did they see trees. Like, you know, it's just so built up. And that was, how many years ago were you in China?
Good question. To work backwards, I've been here in Australia for 3 years. Then I was in the UK for a year and China the 2 years before that. So it was 2014, 2015. I've heard from people I know who are still there that things have gotten better, but some things have also gotten worse. So a government like China that is a repressive, authoritarian state, they can do big projects really quickly and at massive scale. And the price of life there is cheap. The price of people is cheap. You've got, you know, there's no retirement. There's like, you join the civil service and you're a person in your 60s and 70s in an orange jumpsuit at picking up trash off the street because that's what you do for your meager pension. And you just see hordes of legions of orange jumpsuited elderly people looking like inmates on a chain gang picking up rubbish. But also that means that you don't see a lot of rubbish anymore. I've heard that the skies are starting to get bluer because they've taken more coal plants offline, because as at the same time as a lot of people are getting their first car, more and more of those cars are electric. Most transport over there is electric. I used an e-bike for 2 years, little electric scooter, and I just feel like I've come back in time moving to Australia now, because I'm like, why the hell don't we have that here? It's viable. It's so cheap. It's amazing.
Like a moped.
Like a moped.
Oh, yeah. My girlfriend, she'll be listening. She will be like, moving to China.
Yeah, my wife had this baby blue Vespa lookalike electric bike. And I had this thing that looked like a Kawasaki Ninja. It was this big, angry, awesome, went 60K an hour at a 60K range. It was so perfect. So yeah, I was there a while ago, and I know things have changed, but that was eye-opening for me. And I was like, okay, no, climate change isn't a medium to long-term thing. It's going to be, it's going to change my life and my kid's life, and I don't know how to deal with that. So I should start learning about what I can do, but also how to feel, because I think a big thing is going to be, like this month we've seen in Melbourne, the second order effects from a bushfire crisis. And it's shaken people that we don't want to talk about it, but I know it's really affected people. And if you don't know how to handle it, I think it's really going to cause a lot of mental health issues as people don't even know what words to put to their feelings. Words like psychoterratica, the fear of an inhospitable climate, like the fear, like climate anxiety. And there's a whole new slew of words kind of just waiting to enter our vocabulary that it's going to be cool when it's on 7, 9, and 10, but it's also going to mean it's like it's so
bad
here that they can't avoid it anymore. And it's amazing it's not now. Sorry, long answers.
So good though.
Yeah, I could just nod along with you because, yeah, it's exactly
this
how
is also,
I feel.
This is me cheating because I get to synthesize 50, 60 interviews I've done in the last 2 years where I've got to hear really just profoundly engaged people with this who are coming at it from a variety of life perspectives and stages of life. And I just get to be like, okay, here's how that's hit me. And I can, you know, just like, you know, taking loan words from other places and these new words for things, they've got the vocabulary. They've spent the hundreds of hours thinking about this and writing books and facilitating meetings. And I just get to be like, oh, here's what I think. It's taken directly from them.
Yeah. And that's like your story is similar to ours in the sense of that you knew you wanted to learn more, so you use this platform as a way to push you to learn more, basically. So, it wasn't like a financial kind of, you know, I'm going to earn money from doing this. It was more around, I know that I need to somehow figure out what these things mean and why not do it and then put it out to the rest of the world to be able to also learn along. And that's exactly what Sustainable You kind of came about was from that. And we say it, we were each doing little bits and pieces, but we wanted to do more. And so we just wanted other people to come along for the ride and just provide a platform for them to be able to kind of join in and to start making the changes themselves and to see how simple they can also be, you know, and that sort of stuff. So
so here's one that's mine, like some way of engaging with this or some take on it, some interpretation. That's not actually lifted directly from someone else, which is I've seen a lot of groups, I've talked to a lot of people, and everyone kind of, when they get freaked out about this and they want to do something, they'll come up with some new thing, or like they want to start a group or they want to start something. And we all kind of go out and we all try to start inventing a wheel that will get to a climate crisis solution. And I'm like, the wheels all exist. All the solutions exist, and we're not actually helping by going off and trying to invent wheels all ourselves. We just need to get the wheels we have moving faster. And if we all just go off and stop learning from each other and stop talking to each other because, no, we're uniquely freaked out or we think we're uniquely qualified to solve this, it's like, we're not. Like, you're not... There's not a big gap in the market for another Australian Conservation Foundation that needs to be started tomorrow. We've got one. It's quite big and well-organized. Like, go volunteer. So that would just exactly what you said there of, like, we just need to talk to each other and actually take on best practice and get these wheels moving faster.
I agree with you. I mean, you know, I work for Climate for Change, and it's been quite obvious to me recently that people will contact us saying, you know, I've got this great solution, or here's what I think the answer is. And but many people are contacting us going, I really think that all of the climate organizations need to get together and organize something together. And Absolutely, that's what's needed. Like, we have so many, just on our website alone, we have lists of like all of the groups of people that are getting together to fight this climate crisis or to do good things. And in a way, we're all trying to work together, sure. Like, we have CANA, the Climate Action Network of Australia. And that was, it was designed with that purpose in mind, bring everybody together to fight together. But it doesn't always work that way. And so there's like this fine line. I wonder when we're going to get to that tipping point where there's going to be so many small actions and people wanting to make changes. And that's going to then all just have to join in together. It's a really difficult, frustrating situation, because if only there was a way that we could all unite. And sometimes I think it takes a celebrity, like Damon's film, right? So that's a mainstream film, 2040, that everybody can go and see and will enjoy because it's well made and entertaining, as well as being like pushing the fact that we need to harness these solutions. But we need a few more of those kind of like big personalities, because unfortunately, that's the society that we live in. Like, we unite under celebrity. And so if only some of these big celebrities would kind of help pull everybody together, I don't know, I feel like that's what I'm not waiting for that. Like, I'm still doing what I'm doing, but I really hope that that happens soon.
I think it's part of a solution for sure. I've definitely got bits of my personality that resonate more with some solutions over others. And so I naturally tend to think that they are the big solutions. Like, I'll say a dangerous thing for myself. And like, you know, I left China thinking like, democracy? Good. Democracy, very good. I like it very much. I think it's the best system we have for stable times. In the face of existential crisis, a time horizon of 1 to 2 generations to save a livable planet. I don't know. I genuinely don't know. So definitely Australia, which has a cult of personality and cult of celebrity institutional structure baked into this country. We've been bereft of political leadership for 20 or 30 years, the charismatic political leadership. We're kind of skeptical of business leadership, even though we're largely an oligarchy run by the mining and extraction industries. But celebrities, because they've been our biggest cultural export, the rest of the world reveres Chris Hemsworth and Kylie Minogue, so we do. It isn't what I think will solve it, but I see why, and I respect why you think that that will have a big impact. And I agree, I think it will in the Australian context. So I personally always go back to theories of change. I ask a group, you know, you want this? Okay, why? How will that get to the end goal? And I think whenever we have multiple groups kind of working together over something, we're going to have different theories of change. And we need to just have empathy for each other and acknowledge that you're going to do things differently than I will. And I won't think you're right, but I think your motives are right and your goal is the same as mine. So you go try your thing, I'll go try my thing, and then let's meet back up to see who we convinced. I think a lot of the times we're trying to convince other people in the movement that we're right.
Yes.
Even though they're already on the same team.
Yes, absolutely.
Like this afternoon, why don't I go down to a retirement home, say, hi, I'm 29, I'd like to sit and talk to a retiree who hasn't had a visit from family in 3 weeks. Is there anyone who'd like to sit down for a chat with me for an hour? Just like weekend at Maury's. And then why don't we have a bunch of young people from Climate for Change and ACF and AYCC go do the same? Just be like, hey, we're freaked out about climate change, but we're not going to be blocking traffic and yelling it at you. We're going to sit down for an hour-long chat about how we want to have the life that you had. We're really grateful you fought in wars. And we don't want to have to do the same. And if you don't want us to have to do the same, how about you don't vote for ScoMo?
So what problem does Mark Spencer from Climactic solve? Or what does Climactic podcast solve?
Yeah, I'll quickly answer the first part and the second part. So the problem that Mark Spencer solves is I'm loud and
I went to the club.
Oh, that's the thing. I'm not saying that Australians will always remain buttoned down. It's just really hard to convince them to undo that top button, and then they're fantastic. But convincing them to just like, it's okay to talk. It's okay. Mm. Mm. Yeah. So that's been the problem that I've personally kind of addressed and tried to solve. And the people around me, I've given a push to people who are experts and who are much better at engaging and talking to people and interviewing people, and they know what the hell they're talking about. And so that's what I've been able to at least get a seed of with Climactic, is a group of 7, 8, 9. I actually struggle to keep count of how many people are actively doing interviews with us. People can drop in and drop out as life demands.
Interviewees?
Interviewers.
Yeah. Interviewers. Yeah. Right. Yep, yep, yep.
So because you started it with just Rich, is that right?
Yeah, yeah.
So how did you meet Rich? Like, tell us how you got started.
Yeah, so, and I'll answer the problem Climactic solves in kind of the story of Climactic. So, original problem, I wanted to hear a show like Climactic. It didn't exist. So, Facebook, a group called Australian Podcasters, a group of a few hundred podcasters or podcast curious people who wanted to do a podcast but maybe didn't. I'd say, I'm not sure the ratio, maybe it's 50-50, and a group of maybe 300 when I joined that had a show, wanted to do a show. So I joined as someone who wanted to do a show. I was a pretender. I deny that, you know, in the questions of, you know, yay, you're joining the Australian Podcasters Facebook group. Do you have a show? Yes, I do. It's called I'm About to Start a Show.com. And I put out a post saying, I am a mid-20-something... I work in sales right now. I'm an American Kiwi. I'm new to Melbourne. I'm so excited to be in a city where I have listened to podcasts from. Like, this is a city where things actually get made. And so I said, yeah, I'd like to do something about climate. Is there anyone here who'd be a co-host or a co-founder with me? Because I don't have the confidence to do it by myself. And yeah, Rich popped up. He said, yep, I'm keen. I've been thinking about this for a while. I've got a show about permaculture I've been doing for a while. Let's do it. So I then immediately, he posted his reply within about 10 minutes of me posting. I then replied within seconds. We're then on a phone call. By that afternoon, we've got a show outline done. By next week, I've, you know, got the URL. I've decided on a name. We're recording. We've booked interviews with folks. Like, it happened so quickly. I think, like, soup to nuts, within 2 weeks, we were live.
Wow. That is incredible.
It came at the right time. I had a day job that was not mentally taxing, so I needed somewhere to put my energy, and it was this. So we launched on Earth Day, which was April 18th, 2018. We launched in St. Kilda at Luna Park, where Act on Climate, which is part of Friends of the Earth, big international organization, were having a banner drop. They had a photo at the face of Luna Park, the very iconic Luna Park smiling moon, and it was showing that was going to be the high water mark in like 2040. So it started then. Rich was interviewing people in New South Wales, and then I was just meeting people like a fiend in Melbourne. I was networking, you know, 5 nights a week at events. So, and to this day, the majority of our listenership has been from Victoria, and I think a lot of that is thanks to people who gave me their phones so I could subscribe to the show.
Wow.
Nearly 2 years later, and we're now a collective, which was always the idea that I wanted to hear it. I didn't want to make it. So by bringing on people or letting people know that they can use our show kind of as a way to get started, say you've got an idea for a show, you're 9/10 of the way there, but it's just really hard to pull the trigger. Be like, oh, well, we've already got a show. You've got to, you know, when do you want your episode to go up? 3 weeks, 4 weeks? Fine, just send me the audio and it's done.
Yeah,
just way lower barrier to entry. Mm. So that's why Climactic is this kind of, it's hard to describe what it is to people because it's a variety show. It's a grab bag. It's stories from the wide and diverse climate community of Australia and the South Pacific.
All right, guys. Well, we hope that you are enjoying this chat with Mark Spencer from the Climactic Network as much as Lisa and I enjoyed having a chat with him. We're actually going to take a break because we can talk. We all can talk. So we thought that we'd make this a part one, part two. So we hope that you've enjoyed this first part, and we look forward to bringing you the second half in a couple of weeks' time.
Talk about the Greens, that bunny, that bunch of idiots.
Hey there, Climactic Collective listeners.
I'm Emerald Moon.
And I'm Tom Bella.
And together we host Serious Danger,
a podcast about Australia's broken political system and its greatest threat,
the Australian Greens.
Yeah. It's a show about green politics in Australia.
The kind of politics that puts people and the planet before profit.
We talk to cool and interesting people about fighting for good shit, like taxing billionaires,
housing for all,
workers' rights,
First Nations justice,
and drugs. Sweet, sweet, sweet drugs.
Join us on Serious Danger every Sunday. You can subscribe to us anywhere you get podcasts.
You can find us on Patreon. We're at Serious Danger AU on the socials, or just head to seriousdangerpod.com.
That's Serious Danger with me, Emerald Moon.
And me, Tom Ballard. Do you think we need something at the end there? Go Greens.